widely in abuses of lending that have resulted in people losing their homes, thousands and thousands of people losing their homes, all throughout the Pacific Northwest and throughout the country. The Busbys are one example of that, a poignant example, because Cheryl Busby works for an agency that was given donations by the Gates Foundation in part to counsel victims of predatory lenders, victims of the subprime industry. And this the company that was the predator in their case, AmeriQuest, was implicated as a predator in their case, is also a company that the Gates Foundation is profiting from as an investor.
We're going to have to leave it there. Charles Piller, Los Angeles Times reporter, two-part series on the Gates Foundation. I want to thank you very much for being with us. We'll certainly link to it at our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Chief of Nokaduce, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Rubert, Janara Mate, Lee Burek, Jen Utes, Anna Nagara, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nagara, engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you heard Democracy Now! Over WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock, which means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. And we're going to have to hurry tonight because it's another abbreviated program. There's a basketball game coming up at 6:45, so we're going to have to try and cram it all in. And it's especially important because we're on the eve of the new plan. Yeah, the new plan. There's a new plan in the works. It's being talked about in the back rooms of Washington, and apparently George is staying up late at night to write in the final details. But I understand he still needs help. And he welcomes ideas and suggestions. And, of course, the phone number down there at the White House, 202-456-1414. Give that a call if you have a suggestion for the president to include in the new plan on how to get our asses out of Iraq and not get anybody else killed in the process. I'm sure the plan they come up with is going to work. I'm sure it's all being being carefully considered. Yeah. Actually, what I really would like, I'd like for people to call us a little bit later on in the program, maybe in about 25 minutes or so, and tell us, because I don't think they're going to listen to you down there, tell us what you think will be the answer, the way of getting out of this thing, how it should be done. I guess, what do we do at this point? I mean, it's 4 years later, almost 4 years later, when we send people in there against our will. And now what? It didn't work. All the naysayers were proven right. So what do we do now? There's a lot of controversy. The first 100 hours of the Democratic Congress has begun. And what that is a period of time where the Democrats are pledging to pass all sorts of legislation that will actually change the direction of very many things. Well, certainly Iraq is the thing we need to change the direction of the most. But what is the answer? I honestly don't have an answer because, you know, it's like, okay, let me try and draw an analogy here. Let's say that you're arguing with somebody over whether or not it's safe to play in the Long Island Expressway, okay? I'm coming up with this on the fly, so bear with me if it's not the best analogy. Let's just picture the Long Island Expressway. Not now, not when it's a parking lot, when everybody's going 5 miles an hour, and hi, listeners who are listening to us there. I'm talking about when there are very few cars on the road, not very few, but not as many as there are now during rush hour, and you can achieve a good driving speed of, say, 40, 50, 60, etc., miles per hour. Now, you're arguing with this buffoon over whether or not you should be playing in the Long Island Expressway, you know, playing a game of baseball or I don't know, handball, whatever people play in the streets these days. Street hockey, how about that? All right, so you're overruled. Common sense doesn't apply, and you're told, no, this is where you're going to play in the middle of the Long Island Expressway. Now, the time has come where, I mean, the answer that I would propose at the beginning is very simple. Don't play in the street. Don't play in the highway. Very simple. But now you're at the stage where you've been playing in the highway, and you look up, and there's an 18-wheel truck, and it's about maybe a foot and a half away from you, and it's coming at 60 miles an hour. Now, what is your plan? You see, this is where we are right now. We didn't want to be in the street, but we are. And the truck is about to hit us. Now what do? You don't do anything because there's nothing left to do. You're screwed. All right? And as far as responsibility, I gotta say, you know, I think we all have to share that. We didn't do enough. We didn't get angry enough. Look at how people demonstrate in other countries. I mean, in Paris, if you just threaten to change the way the job program works, or change the tax by a percent or something, anything, change the flavor of the ice cream at the local store, you have people pelting the cops with all kinds of objects, general strikes, mobs of people running down the street, all sorts of chants that are very rhythmic and catchy. But here, what do? We have a couple of rallies, big ones too, which proves that everybody is against this thing. And then what? In typical fashion, factions develop. And we start condemning each other instead of the real enemy, which got us into this thing. So, yeah, that's where we stand, and that's why it's a responsibility that needs to be shared with a whole lot of people. And honestly, I don't know what the plan is. I don't know how to get out of this thing. That's why I think the Democrats are going to bear the brunt of it, because for the next 2 years, they're sort of in control of Congress, sort of. And if they don't come up with a solution, I think a lot of people will say, you know what, you're no better. So let's give the Republicans yet another chance in 2008, because nobody's going to want Hillary. But that's just my feeling. So yeah, any suggestions that you have would be most welcome. We'll give out the phone number just a little bit. Interesting bits of news over the last few days. You know, occasionally you realize that a place like New York City, big, massive city with millions and millions of people, it's actually very much like a small town. Have you ever noticed that? Things happen, and the whole city basically is captivated, is following this one thing that's going on. Like, for instance, when the kitten got stuck between the two buildings, and the whole city knew about Molly the cat, who was stuck in a wall, and would the cat get out in time? And everybody was cheering when the cat was finally freed from its captivity. Occasionally something like that happens. This week was unbelievable. We talked about this for just a few seconds last week because it had just happened, but you had the story where this poor person had some kind of seizure and fell into the subway tracks right when a train is coming. I mean, can you imagine that? And this guy with military training, which I said at the time was exactly what military training should be used for, without virtually a second thought, jumped into the tracks, knew exactly what to do, knew that there was enough clearance to push this person down between the rails and lie on top of them and still have a little bit of space for the train to pass over them. Everybody thought they were dead when the train rolled over them. I think about five cars did. But no. He saved that person's life and lived to tell about it. Was a hero of the city. Everybody knew about this. Everybody was talking about it. It was incredible. Then a couple of days later, some poor kid fell out of a window and two people passing by were able to catch the kid. They were heroes. Strangers helping other strangers. It's the best part about New Yorkers, because that's what we do. And then you had a real tragic story on Friday. I was driving into the city from the island, and there's a part of Queens where you pass under the Long Island Railroad, and I noticed, I knew right away something was wrong, because there was a train just stopped there. There's a train stopped there. It was rush hour, and as I passed under the bridge, I looked to the right. I saw there was another train, and yet another. The trains were all over the place, and none of them were moving, so I knew something had happened, and sure enough, I found out that this horrible tragedy where This kid was painting graffiti on one of the switch boxes that are on the side of the tracks, and was in the process of running home, ran across the ran across the tracks, and was hit by a speeding commuter train and killed. And that resulted in delays of many, many hours for a lot of people, affected thousands. But the real story, of course, was the tragedy of a 13-year-old losing his life in such a way. So, yeah, you know, the whole city has followed these things, these relatively localized incidents, but they become the subject matter for just about everybody. And once again, I gotta say, once again, it was utterly disgusting reading about this particular story, this tragedy that happened, and the response to it at our favorite newspaper again, Newsday, which apparently just caters to ignorami. Is that the right word? I guess I'm one of them if it's not. Stupid people. Stupid, ignorant, intolerant, negative, horrible, dumb, probably unattractive people. Who just say the most insensitive, callous things at a time like this. For instance, I'm not going to read any of it because it's not worth the oxygen needed to actually read those words. But basically, the gist of it is that, if this kid wasn't a criminal, wasn't a vandal, that was someplace he wasn't supposed to be, this wouldn't have happened. Good riddance. It's Darwinism. What horrible things to say. Like you've never done anything outside the strict boundaries of the law. You know, I was a kid too once. I really was. And something very similar happened to me. I wasn't a graffiti artist. I probably never will be. And yeah, you know what? That is a valid term because I've seen some graffiti that is much better than the surfaces that it replaces. But regardless, yeah, of course, it's not legal, and it's not very smart to be doing it in such a dangerous place. But in my particular case, I was just hanging out on an abandoned train platform in the city of Jamaica, the village, whatever you call it, it's in Queens. And as a little kid, I used to be fascinated. In fact, I'm still fascinated by just watching trains go by. And it was just a cool thing. There were four tracks, and there were different kinds of trains. Some had diesels, some were electric. Of course, I didn't really know the difference. I just knew that they looked different, they looked cool. And there were other kids that I met down there that would do similar things. Some of them were stupid. Some of them would throw rocks at the trains. But, you know, I tried not to do things like that. But one time I wanted to see the other side of the tracks. There was another platform over across the four tracks. So that meant crossing the tracks, walking across the tracks, which is really what this kid did. He didn't judge the train speed well enough, obviously. In fact, it was very foggy, so he probably didn't even see the train as he was running across four tracks. And I had a clear view. I knew there weren't trains coming, but there was one thing I didn't know. As I was crossing the middle tracks, there was a different kind of a rail there. The outer tracks were just normal train tracks, the kind you'd see anywhere in the world. But the middle one, it had some weird track, weird kind of rail with a piece of wood on top of it. And I didn't really know what that was. I was 6 or 7, maybe 8, I don't know. But I didn't know what it was. Turned out, of course, it was the third rail. And, of course, I know now, in fact, I knew pretty soon after that, that third rail is extremely dangerous. But there was a moment there where I didn't know what it was. I didn't know, do I just step on this thing like I'm stepping on the other one? Should I treat this any differently? And basically, something told me, you know what, best that you turn around and go back and maybe try this some other time, which is what I did. But think about that, a split-second decision, one little decision, one mistake, and it can be extremely costly. And that's what happened here. That's what happened in Queens on Friday. One kid made a horrible mistake. And just to see people in this callous way, and I think this has happened in our society so many times, where anybody who steps out of line even a little bit deserves whatever they get. We've seen that in the Sean Bell case, the poor guy who got mowed down by the cops for reasons that we still don't know and maybe never will. Well, what was he doing in a strip club? There was alcohol in his breath. He was legally drunk. He deserves to die. Where does this end? Jaywalking? Speeding? Parking tickets? You have to ask the mentality of people who are just so rigidly controlled by the rules and regulations and think themselves so high and mighty that they can pass judgment on anybody's imperfections. It's scary because maybe 20 years ago, such an attitude was seen as bizarre, a parody, a joke of some sort. And now it's turning into the norm. Now, in all fairness, a lot of this hostility, if you can believe that, hostility towards a dead kid, is being fueled by announcements that they're going to sue the railroad, and the family's going to sue the railroad, which I think is wrong. Obviously, it's not the railroad's fault. They're supposed to be running trains on rails, and people aren't supposed to be running across the tracks. That's just common sense. I can understand why they're looking for some kind of answer, some kind of entity to blame, but it's wrong. But it doesn't warrant this kind of backlash that we're seeing at Newsday. And of course, it's not fair to say Newsday, but basically when you open up the doors to anybody to just say whatever they feel like, whatever racist crap, whatever ignorant statement, and treat it the same way as you would somebody who does research and reports on a story, give it the same amount of space, you're tearing your own name down. And I'm torn on this issue too, because as a publisher, I like to have free and open exchange of ideas and information. But there are these people out there. They're everywhere. Who get a big thrill out of simply destroying whatever it is that's around them. And getting attention for it, speaking the loudest, saying the most horrible things. Take a look at Usenet on the internet. This is where news groups are basically created and used by people all over the world. In fact, if you go to Google Groups, you should see a fair amount of news groups there. But there's all sorts of ways you can access them. There's always some idiot there, known as a troll, who basically just starts arguments with people, derails the conversation, whatever conversation happens to be going on. And there are ways of dealing with people like this. It's called moderation. It's called just basically, and it sounds nasty. It sounds like censorship, but it's not. Shutting them out of the conversation because they're disruptive. They're not accomplishing anything. They're simply making it impossible for other people to have any kind of communication. Now, why it's not censorship? Because basically, if you run something, if you run a newspaper, if you run a bulletin board, if you run some kind of forum, you have the right to run it any way you wish. It's only censorship when the government steps in and says you are not allowed to talk about this. You will be punished if you start talking about this. That's censorship. Anything else is pretty much editing. All right. So that's something that just bothers me a lot, because it just seems, this is on the front page of Newsday's website, is basically a link next to the story. Share your views. And you click on that link, and all of a sudden the views you see are just so offensive, ignorant, and stupid. It just makes your whole impression of the human race go way down the tubes. So yeah, you had that. And, wow, it was quite a week in New York. Quite a week indeed. And then, of course, yesterday, the smell. Yeah, the smell of New York City was something that I missed, actually. It happened, I think, at 9 o'clock in the morning and lasted for a couple of hours. And basically was something that spread throughout the entire city and made everyone think that there was a big natural gas leak. And I knew right away, I knew exactly what this was. Why? Because this was something I had always wondered about. In my devious sort of way, I always wondered what would happen if somebody were to get a hold of a certain chemical known as ethyl mercaptan. What that is the drug, not the drug, the chemical, might be a drug, who knows, that gives natural gas its odor. Natural gas has no odor. It's important that natural gas have an odor because otherwise you'll never know if it's leaking. So that's why they add this particular odor to it, but it's extremely potent. A single drop will basically stink up an entire neighborhood. Now, I looked into what it would take to actually get a hold of this chemical years ago, just out of curiosity. And you need to be a chemist. You need to register all sorts of things. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to get, but somebody has it, obviously. So one of two things happened. Either a plant that that manufactures this particular chemical had some sort of a leak themselves, or somebody was up to something. They're trying to blame it on New Jersey, I know that, which is an easy thing to do. But I think if it's something that actually was being dropped in New York City, it's going to be very easy, very, very easy for them to figure out how it happened, where it was dropped. And since you have to be a chemist to get this thing in the first place, maybe not so hard to find out who did it. But yeah, it's kind of scary because it shows how quickly something like that can spread all throughout the city. What also was weird was the mayor was saying, you know, we don't know what this is, but it's not dangerous. Yeah, that's really reassuring. Thank you, Mr. Bloomberg. But according to numerous sources, ethyl mercaptan can cause headaches, nausea, and a lack of coordination, as well as liver and kidney damage. Of course, you have to breathe in quite a bit of it. But then again, people have different tolerances for these things, and some people were breathing in a lot more. According to the 2000 edition of the Guinness Book of World Records, ethyl mercaptan is the smelliest substance in existence. So yeah, that was fun. I missed it, unfortunately. But I'm sure it'll happen again. We had the maple syrup smell a couple of years ago. This happens occasionally. Hi, you're the sports guy, right? Okay, you're trying to patch in something? You can speak out loud. You can speak out loud. It's okay. He's mouthing things to me. Do you want to plug something in there? Write down what you want to plug in, and then we'll figure it out.
I know what I want to plug in. I just want to know if you need this.
Yeah, I need all that.
I need pot 8.
I'm using pot 8. My voice is coming out of pot 8 right now. This is the delay system. What I can do, if you write down what you need, I can plug it in for you as soon as... okay.
We need to do a sound test.
Well, we need another channel. Sorry. We only have one delay system, and one channel comes up on. All right, what else? That was the fun week in New York City, where it felt like a nice little small town. Tonight on television is a new TV program premiering that you won't be able to see in this country. It's called Little Mosque on the Prairie. It's a Canadian sitcom. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Little Mosque on the Prairie. It's a Canadian sitcom debuts on Tuesday, excuse me. You know, I still have this cold from last week. Tuesday. The remnants of it, anyway. January 9th, that's today. It depicts immigrant Muslims bumping up against white locals in rural Saskatchewan. So, of course, right away, that's of no interest to Americans, and it will not be seen in this country. But I get Canadian TV, so I will be able to tape that tonight and report on it next week. Zargar Nawaz, who is the creator and writer of the groundbreaking show, insists she's an equal opportunity satirist, taking dead aim at both Muslim and Canadian stereotypes in a post-September 11th world. I expect both groups will be wondering if the other finds the show funny. There are predictable jokes about Muslim beliefs clashing with Canadian traditions. In one scene, a father wearing a kufi, or a knitted cap worn by devout Muslims, protests that his Canadian-born daughter wearing a revealing tank top looks like a Protestant. "Don't you mean prostitute?" the daughter asks. "No, I meant a Protestant," the father replies. In another scene, a young man of Middle Eastern origins with a Canadian accent is heard in an airport check-in line telling his mother via cell phone that his father shouldn't think his choosing to stop being a Toronto lawyer to become an imam in Saskatchewan amounts to career suicide. "This is Allah's plan for me," the young man says in passing before an arresting cop appears suddenly and tells the surprised lawyer that he won't be making that appointment in paradise. Nawaz, a British-born Muslim and mother of four who settled on the prairie with her family a decade ago, downplays the idea that the homegrown comedy may spark widespread controversy, as if that's a bad thing, you know? Why is widespread controversy such a bad thing to do? All right. Okay, you gotta tell me what I can do to help. This guy is making me nervous standing over my shoulder here. If I went to Channel 9, would that help you? It would. Okay, well, let's try it. Don't want to discuss it over the air? Well, then, all right, then stand outside. We'll discuss it after the show. Trying to help out here. Kind of hard to do it over you like this. If you want to plug it into Channel 9, go right ahead. I'll move to Channel 9. You may hear some dead air. Okay, now I'm on Channel 9. Now you have Channel 8. Let's hope it works. I think it's working. I got to move over here. All right. I don't know if I'm coming through both channels, but... All right, doesn't sound like I'm coming through both channels, so maybe you can put it back when you're done, because I think it got kind of messed up by moving it over there. All right, continuing with our TV program here. Yeah, if you could, when you're done, put it back in channel 8, because... yeah, I know, but I think I'm only coming through one channel, that's the problem. I think. According to the headphones, I'm only coming through one channel. Okay, in Japan land, a troupe of dancers in skin-colored bodysuits had Japanese national broadcaster NHK apologizing to viewers of its New Year's Eve music special for what seemed to be a full-scale Janet Jackson-style wardrobe malfunction. The dancers all appeared to be topless and wore skimpy bikini-style bottoms and feathered headdresses, covered the stage during a performance by singer DJ Ozma, prompting about 250 viewers to phone in and complain. The dancers were wearing bodysuits, but we apologize for any misunderstanding, a presenter announced towards the end of the 57th annual Red and White Song Contest. "I guess it looked a bit too real," local media quoted the singer as telling reporters after the show, which regularly tops viewer ratings on New Year's Eve in Japan. You know what? I'll bet this is the end of it, too. I bet they don't have all sorts of lawsuits and fines and things like that that go on for years and years. Just a simple little crisis that ends quickly. All right, again, our phone number, actually, the first time giving out the phone number, is 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. If you have a plan to help out with the new Iraq situation. George W. Bush will be announcing his plan tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, but I understand there's still room to influence the decision a little bit. You know, we had calls and they disappeared. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Let's see. We have all sorts of Iraq-related stories here. As if... Should I take this call? I'm going to take the call in case it goes away. Good evening. You're on off the wall here.
9/11 was an inside job.
Okay. Inside where? That's all you got to say? Oh, come on. If you're going to say something like that, at least say something else. 9/11 was inside what? Inside your brain? Inside the building? Inside the country? Inside what? What does that mean? Good God. Good evening. You're on off the wall.
Yeah, I'm just calling to say about your channels. I'm only hearing you on one channel, and the other channel is music, like rap or something.
Oh, great. Okay. You know, I hopefully the person who just messed it all up is hearing this and can plug it back in the way it was. I've got a basketball game coming up, but, you know, there's no reason for it to mess up the other shows. Anything else on your mind while I try to figure this out?
No, I just want to relate that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling. This is what we got to deal with here. Okay, I'm going to try and put things back the way they're supposed to be, and I stand on the other side of the room. Okay, I'm back, and let's see if it actually works. Sorry for the incredible... Okay, I'm back. Yeah, this is working now. I'm sorry. This is what happens when you have an old board and a limited amount of flexibility. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Okay, you couldn't make this up. The Army is inviting dead people. I'm not kidding. People who have been killed in combat, they are inviting them to come back and serve again. The Army said it's going to apologize to families of about 275 officers killed or wounded in action who were mistakenly sent letters urging them to return to active duty. The letters were sent a few days after Christmas to more than 5,100 Army officers who had recently left the service. Included were letters to about 75 officers killed in action and about 200 wounded in action. You couldn't make this kind of stuff up. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, how you doing? Good evening.
How are you?
I'm a minor fan of your show. I agree with a lot of the stuff you say.
Thank you.
And I'm listening tonight, and I was wondering, can I tell you a quick subway story?
A quick subway story? Sounds intriguing. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a carpenter now, and I was a carpenter my whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm in New York with my friend Frankie. We're both carpenters. Got our tools. And we're at Whitehall Street.
Okay.
We're going home. It's rush hour. And Whitehall, I think, it's the first stop in Manhattan, or last, if you're going to Brooklyn. We're heading for Brooklyn.
Okay.
And we're watching, you know, both sides of the platform are marked. And we're watching this gentleman bumping into people, like kind of he's a disheveled guy, maybe a homeless guy or something. And he's bumping into people as he's walking along the platform on the opposite side.
Uh-huh.
Of where we're standing. We're standing on the other side. So he gets about halfway, well, a little more than halfway, and he really bumps this guy with his shoulder, and the guy falls down onto the tracks.
Oh, my God.
You know, just a normal commuter, an older guy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what happened, but, and Frankie reacted too. We jumped down,
mm-hmm.
ran across, you were saying third rail?
Yeah.
We must have jumped over too.
Right, because there's the other one next to it on the other side.
And now... the train's going to be coming, let me think, from Brooklyn. So, but we had a little time, in other words. No train came. I said to Frankie, come on, let's go. We picked this guy up. We just threw him. We got no time for heroics.
Uh-huh. You threw him where?
On top of the platform.
Okay.
The old guy that he pushed down.
Right. You picked him up and threw him up onto the platform. Okay. But you're still down the tracks.
Right. So we jump up and run after the guy. It's a real New York story.
Of course.
We go after the guy who pushed him, and a bunch of New Yorkers surrounded him.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, don't worry, we got him. We called the cops, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. So we run back. We said, forget it, Frank. Our tools are gone. And, you know, if you add up your tools, you're talking over a grand, easy. You
right.
Know, hand tools.
Right.
A woman stayed there and watched our tools.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, when I saw you guys go jump, she said, nobody's going to take your tools. She said, I stood here and waited. And our tools were there. We just jumped on the subway and we went home.
Wow. And, you know, I don't think it's that unusual that you could expect somebody to do that in a situation like that.
Well, I tell you, it's just reaction. When you hear people say it's just reaction, I ain't no hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you the truth, I wish Frankie, I wonder what happened to him. He got into drugs, that poor kid.
Oh, dear.
But you just react. And I'm not saying I'm no hero, and it was really cool the way all the New Yorkers all chipped in and the rest of the country talks about us, how we're mean or this or that.
No, it's totally not true, and I think anybody who actually comes here realizes that pretty quickly. I think it's just people like to demonize certain areas or locations because they don't understand it, but
exactly.
I invite people to come and check it out yourself, and you'll see that it's not like they portray it. And I think you've probably encountered this on a number of occasions, right?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
The good-heartedness of New Yorkers.
Well, yeah, right, yeah. And, you know, some tough stuff, too, in the subway, anyway. But, mm-hmm. you know, most of the time, people help each other. And especially in emergencies, New Yorkers just jump.
Mm-hmm.
We love that stuff with the snows and stuff.
Right, of course.
Bubbling and, you know, chipping in and helping your neighbor and stuff.
But, did you experience a smell yesterday?
The New Yorkers.
Did you experience yesterday's smell?
No.
Smell, not snow. Smell, the natural gas smell in New York City.
No. I was in Queens. I was in Five Towns.
Okay, it didn't spread all the way out there then.
No, I didn't smell a thing.
Okay. And finally, what we're asking people tonight, do you have anything to help George W. Bush out for his speech tomorrow? Any plans that might work?
Oh, please, no. No, I don't want to get into it. He should have been impeached. That's all I can tell you.
You know, it's not too late. It's not too late to impeach him, to put him on trial, to do all sorts of things. I really think people should be held accountable for what they do.
And the Founding Fathers wanted impeachment during these kind of times because they knew people would get out of hand. But we're looking at it in the opposite direction now.
Yeah.
With the eyes of, 2007. It's a shame. I don't want to say nothing, no. Just I'm very negative about him and bring my boys home.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Thanks for calling. Great story. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah. Hi, Emmanuel. How are you?
How are you doing?
Oh, good.
What's on your mind?
I hope you're joining me in celebrating our glorious victory over Somalia.
Oh, yeah. You know, I forgot to even mention that. We attacked another country today. Let's add that to the list, Somalia. Now, it's great how this is being reported. Look at the headline on CNN, U.S. strikes al-Qaeda in Somalia. Well, that's great. What would the headline be if China decides to bomb Brooklyn to get a crime family? China attacks Gambeses in Brooklyn. Come on, we're invading another country again. I mean, fair enough to say that it's probably better than what's there now, but still, why is it always up to us to do these kinds of things?
Well, it's not really us. It's the military state that we happen to reside within.
Yeah, unfortunately, they represent us to the rest of the world.
I think, for, Bush's, speech, my advice would be to say I resign in disgrace and will turn myself in for the appropriate punishment for lying and deceiving and profiting from the killing of hundreds of thousands of people. So I thought your analogy of the truck on the expressway was unfortunately accurate.
It was the best I could do on short notice, but I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, but I think that, what we have to do or try to do is what we always have to do is try to promote the idea of peace and cooperation among the people of the world and to make sure that the worst, most egregious criminals are held accountable. In this case, it would be Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the rest of the gang. I mean, we can't give up. That's my feeling about it.
Do you think, though, that we do share some responsibility in just not speaking up loudly enough while we had the chance?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What could we have done differently?
Believed that the worst things that could happen could happen, and that, and this is what has happened. I do feel that we share collective responsibility, and that now we have to redouble our efforts as we go forward. So, there's going to be a demonstration Thursday at 3:00 at William Floyd Parkway and I think Sunrise Highway.
That's a strange place to have a demonstration.
Well, it's just a highly visible area that people are going to be gathering because we know that tomorrow night is going to be the big speech and everything, so we want to kind of, try to, take the moment. And Saturday, 11 a.m. in front of Babylon Town Hall, we have a demonstration on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm. How many people show up?
We get about 10, 12, sometimes more. We had about 70 people at the Veterans Memorial the other night for the the announcement of a 3,000 soldier killed, and that was on News 12.
I mean, I'm not trying to any way diminish what you're doing, but don't you think those numbers are incredibly small?
Pathetic. It's really got to ratchet up in size and in activity. Mm-hmm. I talked to a woman the other day who wrote a wonderful letter in Newsday about impeachment being our civic duty, and I gave her a call because I looked up in the phone book and thanked her and told her about WUSB and, all the good programs that there are. And, I feel like, we have to just keep going. I mean, people know where to go. You go to the websites, you go to the phone, you go to the meetings, you go to the demonstrations, and you just try to get people, to do whatever they can do.
Yeah, but, people also have to feel like they can actually make a difference, and I think that's what's been taken from us. I think that's what we don't have anymore is a feeling that, my voice is going to actually turn the page somehow. I think we're all just basically programmed to believe that we just consume, we just exist, we do our 9-to-5 thing, and that's the most we can ever hope for.
Yeah, the when you talked about France and the way things are over there, I thought of how different of a culture it is, where there is that history of solidarity, and we have been broken down into very individualized modes of thinking. I don't really have any specific answers, My feeling is, we're going to see what we're going to see in this. If people, I hope, will regain that kind of collective consciousness that's been absent for so long. The corporate media is really an insult. So people need to... find out and communicate other ways. But I'll get off the phone now. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Let's see if we can squeeze in another one. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
I don't really have a comment about the... I think that Bush should really just apologize, obviously, but I don't think he'll do that. But my comment is about how the media portrays President Ford's death.
Okay.
At my school, the day of the funeral, on the... on the announcements at my school, they had a moment of silence, and it sounded like the principal was just reading from the AP report. He would say, like, how he helped the nation heal. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, like, way too political for the school to be saying, because, I mean, obviously he didn't help the nation heal. He kind of opened up the box for Bush to be doing what he's doing, so.
Yeah, very good point, because, yeah, doing that kind of a thing, pardoning Nixon and not allowing for Nixon to be punished for his crimes, pretty much said, you know, it's okay, you're going to get away with it.
Yeah.
And look what they're getting away with now. Yeah, it's pretty sad and pathetic. All right, thanks for your feedback.
Bye.
I think we're going to end it here because, we got to figure out what to do for the next program. I got to get those patches back in somehow. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Next week we'll have a full hour, and hopefully we'll... be coming to you with uninterrupted sound and all sorts of other fun things as well. For Off the Wall,
1, 2, 3, 4.
This is Emmanuel Goldstein on Off the Hook tomorrow night on the other radio station. Back here again next week. Keep alert, keep awake. Watch Bush tomorrow. It's going to be fun. See you next week. otw@2600.com. Good night.
The memories of a man in his old age are the deeds of a man. Shuffle in the gloom of the sick room and talk to yourself as you die. And life is a short, warm moment, and death is a long, cold rest. You get your chance to try in the twinkling of an eye, 80 years with luck or even less. And maybe you'll make it to the top. But mind how you go, and I can tell you, 'cause I know you may find it hard to get off. Beats the funeral drum.
his prime. Shuffle in the gloom of the sick room and talk to yourself as you die.
Coast Guard. I'm the safety pirate.
And you do what?
Why, I'm a fellow boat and safety enforcer. You know, wear your life jacket, take a boat and safety course, the usual boat and safety stuff.
Oh, so you must know the new Homeland Security issues for recreational boaters, right?
The landlubbers what?
Homeland Security. You know, no anchoring under bridges, keeping your distance from all U.S. naval and commercial vessels, avoiding security zones and busy ports. Ring a bell?
Oh, those issues.
Yeah.
Say, you happen to have a copy of those. You know, for the, uninformed boaters?
Right.
Make sure you know the new Homeland Security issues for boating. Visit www.safeboatingcouncil.org. By doing your part, you can help your boating law enforcement officials do theirs.
And remember, matey, boat smart, boat safe.